Chapter 9. Getting of Wisdom. After 3 years of secondary education in New Guinea at Rabaul High School, located on the eastern tip of New Britain, it was time for me to move on to my next character-building adventure, to continue my schooling down south in Australia. This was made possible because my mother, an employee of the New Guinea administration, was entitled to financial assistance to help cover the costs associated with a child attending boarding school in Australia. The package also included a return airfare to Rabaul, once a year. I was just 15. My mother had thoroughly researched suitable boarding schools for my last 2 years of secondary education. The short list included the Friends School in Tasmania, Frensham in Mittagong, St. Gabriel's in Charters Towers, St. Margaret's in Brisbane and the Glennie Memorial School in Toowoomba. The latter was chosen because my brother and his wife had left plantation life in New Guinea to manage a family property at Drillam Siding, some 220 kilometres west of Toowoomba. The property was close enough for my brother to come to the rescue, if need be. Toowoomba's proximity to Brisbane Airport was also a consideration, as I needed to get to and from New Guinea up to 3 times a year, with a minimum of fuss. At the end of the 1963 Rabaul High School year, we came through Toowoomba on the way to Sydney for school shopping. We had a long list of school clothing to purchase, from either Bailey's or Piggott's, the iconic upmarket Toowoomba stores, that stocked everything a Glennie girl needed, from blazers and grey stockings, through to the new summer uniform fabric, and a paper pattern in my size. My mother, a super seamstress, planned to make me a couple of uniforms whilst we holidayed in Sydney, over Christmas. After 6 weeks of catching up with friends, I was delivered back to the Glennie Memorial School to begin Year 11, with every single item of my clothing marked with a cashier's name tag, carefully sewn on by hand. I had arrived a few days early, which proved fortuitous, as it gave me the opportunity to get to know the staff and to explore the numerous single and double-storied wooden buildings that were scattered across the school site, in various states of repair. The Year 11 classroom was set between the main building and Sutton House, the junior boarding house, which was an elegant two-story Queenslander, flanked by wide verandas. A pathway of wooden slatted duckboards ran from the end of the main building, past the Year 11 classroom, and onto Sutton House. They were unsightly, but invaluable after rain, making it possible to move between the buildings and avoid the red volcanic soil that became a sticky mess, permanently staining everything it came in contact with. At any new school, there's always a lot to learn, in addition to schoolwork. The idiosyncratic societal norms of this institution were numerous. 3 times a day, we made our way to the dining room. Here, I discovered that it was compulsory for each of us to bring a table napkin to the dining room for use at each meal. We were assigned a table, each one seating 8 girls from a mix of grades, with a senior in charge. Occasionally, when there was an overflow from the headmistress's table, a member of the teaching staff would join us. The first reprimand came at breakfast on the first day of first term. The senior in charge of our table told me to break my toast into pieces before buttering it. And the second came 5 days later, on Sunday morning. As was the tradition, we Glennie girls assembled at the front gate and lined up to march, 2 by 2, from the school complex to the St. James Parish Church in Russell Street for the 9:30 communion service. We were required to wear our full school uniform, including hat and gloves. It was a warm summer's morning when we set off, and I was carrying my gloves, instead of wearing them. I was spotted by a sharp-eyed prefect, who ordered me to immediately put on my gloves and report to the seniors' classroom on our return to school. Somewhat perplexed by the exchange, I wondered what was in store for me. As I pondered my predicament, our procession continued, and some 10 minutes later, we arrived at the rear entrance of St. James Church. My lingering concerns were at once sidelined as we entered. The interior was breathtakingly beautiful. The roof and the honey-coloured timber ceiling were supported by elegant, arched timber trusses. Above the east-facing altar at the far end of the building were three splendid stained glass windows that glowed in the morning light. We Glenny girls silently streamed in, almost completely filling the pews on the right-hand side of the nave. I found the service unfamiliar and strange, having been raised by atheist parents, for whom attending any religious gathering, other than the occasional wedding or funeral, was anathema. After the service, we walked back to school. This Sunday morning ritual was to continue every week of term for the next 2 years. In addition to the Sunday service at St. James Church, we had up to 12 weekly gatherings for worship, in various forms. These were mostly held in the charming timber-lined Glenny Chapel. By the end of my schooling, I had been baptized and confirmed into the Anglican community. I had memorized all the prayers for each service, as well as all the verses of the most often sung hymns, from the Australian hymn book. But I digress. Upon my return to school, I changed into civvies and reported to the seniors' classroom, as instructed. I climbed the steps and knocked. From there, the prefect assigned the punishment. For not wearing gloves to church, I was ordered to copy out the 119th Psalm, the longest psalm in the Anglican Book of Common Prayer, and told to hand it in after dinner, that evening. I was to discover that Psalm 119 comprised 6 pages of teeny-weeny print. This seemed a strange and rather excessive penalty for a minor transgression, however, I began the task in earnest, determined to meet the deadline. At the start, I used my lined foolscap writing pad until I ran out of paper, but I had no more. There were still a number of pages left to copy. What to do? Thinking laterally, I decided to use a roll of toilet paper to complete the task. As instructed, after dinner that evening, I presented myself at the seniors' classroom. When I handed the prefect my writing, her reaction was immediate and apoplectic. I watched in disbelief as her face turned bright red. What happened next was totally unexpected. Within a matter of minutes, I was whisked through a maze of hallways to the deputy principal's private quarters. In the impromptu discussion that followed, the prefect put her case, declaring that my use of toilet paper was disrespectful and an affront to her authority. Then, it was my turn. I explained that my mother was making a considerable financial sacrifice to educate me at the Glenny Memorial School, and that this unnecessarily severe punishment, for a trivial misdemeanor, was a waste of my mother's limited resources. And, to my surprise, that was the end of the matter. Word quickly spread, and from then on, all seniors and staff gave me a wide berth, now well aware that I was able to stick up for myself. I had arrived at the Glenny Memorial School, with straight A passes in 8 subjects for the New South Wales Intermediate Examination, but sadly, from here on in, it was downhill. In the first term mathematics examination, I managed 17%, much to my parents' horror. But there was no offer of remedial coaching. Instead, I was advised to drop the subject. Things were not much better in my other study areas either. However, I adored home economics and art. As the only Year 11 student doing both subjects, I benefited hugely from one-on-one teaching. Being from an artistic family, with prodigious output across a myriad of disciplines, somehow the study of art history had been overlooked. Art lessons at the Glenny Memorial School made up for this oversight in spades. At the beginning of each lesson, I was asked to choose between art history or art practice. It was always a difficult decision to make, because I was passionate about both. Being so far from home, I was always longing for mail, and spent hours writing letters, in the hope of receiving a reply. I remember spending lots of prep, that is, preparation time, typing letters on one of the many antiquated typewriters in the commercial studies classroom. I was not a commercial student, but for some reason I was never challenged. Perhaps the prep supervisors were pleased I was actively engaged and staying out of trouble? I was extremely unhappy at boarding school. I often fantasized about getting expelled, periodically doing something naughty, in the hope I'd be asked to leave. My best effort was a spur-of-the-moment decision to break bounds on the last evening of the second term for Year 12. I was joined on this escapade by a Year 11 friend. We decided to walk down to the Toowoomba Railway Station to farewell our fellow classmates from Western Queensland, who were heading home on the Westlander train. When we arrived at the station, we were warmly greeted by everyone, including the art and drama mistresses, who were assigned to supervise the girls' departure. After the train had left the station, the mistresses kindly invited us to join them for a coffee at the Flying Dutchman, a trendy basement cafe nearby. What fun! But the fun didn't last for long. We were enjoying the incongruousness of the situation and our coffee when, to our collective amazement, the English mistress appeared at the doorway of the cafe. To this day I can see her silhouette in the doorway. She was gobsmacked to find two naughty Glennie girls drinking coffee with two members of staff. The English mistress immediately whisked my friend and I back to school, where we were questioned separately. To be honest, I was secretly thrilled, certain I could begin planning my life after expulsion. However, the upshot was way beyond extraordinary. The school's board of directors decided to allow my friend and I to stay, and to sack both mistresses instead. 1965 was my final year at the Glennie Memorial School. Towards the end of that year, my father, then based in New Zealand, came to visit me for the first time. He spent an hour with the headmistress, after which she immediately called a full school assembly, and resigned. Everyone was overjoyed as she was universally disliked. My father cheekily took the credit for her decision, much to my mother's annoyance. When my time at the Glennie Memorial School came to an end, I promised myself that I'd never return to cold conservative Toowoomba. Ever. On reflection. Leaving home. I didn't realize it at the time, but leaving home at 15 to attend the Glennie Memorial School was my first step in creating a life independent of my family, particularly my mother. Thereafter, I continued to return to New Guinea whenever I had the opportunity. I was always up for an action-packed holiday, even though I was now living in Sydney and studying at the National Art School. After graduating, things changed. I moved into full-time employment as a graphic artist with various organizations that only offered 4 weeks' holiday each year. A far cry from the 10 weeks I enjoyed all the way through school, and at the National Art School as well. Institutions? For me, the Glennie Memorial School was a loveless place, and as a consequence, I developed greater personal independence as a result of the experience. I learned to stand on my own two feet and speak up for myself, a priceless asset that I've utilized often as I've moved through life. Facts. Student numbers. In 1964, the Queensland government raised the school leaving age from 14 to 15 years. As a result, most girls attending the Glennie Memorial School sat for the external junior examination at the end of Year 10 and then left school. Because of this, enrollments for both Year 11 and 12 were greatly reduced. In 1964, I was one of only 12 girls enrolled for Year 11 at the Glennie Memorial School. The following year, almost all of my classmates returned to complete Year 12, a prerequisite for various forms of tertiary education, including teachers' college and university. The Glennie Memorial School was founded in 1908 and named in memory of Archdeacon Benjamin Glennie, the first Anglican priest on Queensland's Darling Downs. By 1907, Toowoomba already had a number of secondary schools for boys. So the Anglican Synod decided to use an £800 bequest to establish a secondary school for girls. The original school building was designed by Toowoomba architect Harry Marks. Many more buildings have been added to the site since I left, at the end of 1965.